DNA testing has really ignited a new interest in finding out about our ancestors. And now with more time on our hands, even more people are getting into it. I'm Jill Nadeau. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. We have two guests with us to help you on your search for your roots. Mary Eberle is a DNA expert who finds birth parents of adoptees and others with unknown parents. She also is an international speaker on using DNA for family research. And with her, Lori Bessler. She is the genealogy and local history specialist in the Wisconsin Historical Society's Library, Archives, and Museum Collections Division. What questions do you have about selecting which DNA test to get? Do you need help finding information? Well, give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send us an email, and that's ideas@wpr.org. Hi, Mary. Hi, Lori. Are you with
Hi.
Us? Hi.
Yes. Hi, Jill.
Hi. It's good to talk with you guys again. Now, you've both been with us a number of times to talk about tracing our roots. What are some of the biggest changes that you've seen in the last 10 years or so? Mary, why don't you start?
Well, definitely a huge change is that so many people are using DNA testing to find their ancestors. Sometimes it's actually a birth parent in the case of adoptees and other people with unknown parents. And that has really changed things. You know, it's really mixed things up, and it's allowed people to find those missing relatives.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Lori? What about the Historical Society?
Well, you know, we focus on the paper trail of research, and quite a bit of the paper trail is now digitized, which is fantabulous. It's just amazing how much I have been able to help people as I'm working from home, and yet we can break through some of those brick walls. So it's exciting.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? Well, and Lori, let's just talk a little bit about some of the help that the Wisconsin Historical Society does provide for those who are looking for their roots.
Okay, well, so one thing is our website, wisconsinhistory.org. It has some different databases and digital collections on it. Also, we hold these webinars and these workshops, one of which is the one that Mary will be doing for us this coming Saturday on the 23rd on DNA, the basics. We have those set up for the fall, too, to have a variety of different topics, African-American genealogy, German-American genealogy, as well as different strategies to follow. I actually meet with people a lot in consultations right now, not in person, but I have had some phone consultations, and now we're starting to use online consultations, meaning like Zoom and other platforms like that. We have an amazing collection at the Historical Society. We are North American in scope, so we have a lot of published materials and documents and maps and county histories and family histories from across the United States and Canada. So our sources are just phenomenal.
And don't you have one of the biggest collections, if I recall?
We do. One of the top five genealogical collections in the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just amazing. Such a wonderful resource here in Wisconsin. Now, Mary, what services do you provide for your clients?
My clients do DNA testing at various companies like Ancestry, 23andMe, Family Tree DNA, and MyHeritage. So, you know, I'm not doing the DNA testing. Instead, I am interpreting those results, and I'm also oftentimes advising them about transferring DNA results from one company to another, because sometimes you just need to be in all of the databases, because we're looking for that cousin who might have the family story or the family Bible. And if we're only testing at one company, we might not find that person. And if you test at multiple companies, or instead you can actually transfer into companies, there are limitations on that, but it's a way to save money.
Okay.
By testing at one place. And so I'm interpreting the results. I'm helping them answer questions. I recently had someone who's looking for her husband's great-grandmother. There was a story that she was a French orphan in the Gold Rush in California, and that she was adopted by a Mexican family and taken to Mexico and raised there. And I was able to look at her husband's DNA results and find some DNA evidence, and of course, paper evidence too, because as we know, you can't just, you know, you don't do a DNA test and poof, your answer's there.
Right.
We really need to we need to combine it with those paper records. And so I was able to come up with some evidence to say, yes, that family story is supported by the DNA evidence.
Very cool. And we do have a phone call. If you have a question for one of our guests or a comment, 1-800-642-1234. And of course, you can always send an email to ideas@wpr.org. So let's go to Kim in Eau Claire. Hi, Kim.
Hello. Thanks for this program.
Mm-hmm.
Last summer, my wife and I went to Salt Lake City to see our kids, and I've known for years the Mormons were very instrumental in genealogy, so we went to the genealogy center there. We were only going to spend a couple days in Salt Lake. We ended up spending 7 days there doing research. And so you can download Family Search and get it on your phone and go and look up things. It's just amazing. And I hardly did a lot of work on some of my family side, and people have done other work and they attach it to your families, and it just goes. I mean, I didn't know it was there. I looked in October and it goes back already on my dad's mom's side. I'm back to the 1644.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. Lori, I'm sure that you've used that database yourself, haven't you?
Yeah, Family Search is a website. FamilySearch.org is the website, and it has various levels. In fact, on our website, WisconsinHistory.org, one of the free webinars we have that you could watch is how to use that site. Not every site has everything you need, but that has a massive amount of data. The trick is, the two levels really to focus on with those two sites, or that one site, one is their online trees. Now, you are depending on the research of others, so everything that you see, you want to check against the actual paper trail, okay, and make sure that they're actually going down the right rabbit hole, let's say. The second part is their digital collections of actual records. And that is phenomenal. They are working so hard at digitizing all of these materials. Now, they've gone around the world. We're just United States and Canada. They're around the world going to churches and civil court records and courthouses and different institutions and telling them, hey, can we scan what you have and make it accessible to our public? And a lot of places have said, yes, you can do that, but with limitations. So there's many layers to that website, but it's a phenomenal website. It's as big, if not bigger, and more important as Ancestry.com.
Oh, my goodness. And is that a free service?
That is a free service. You can post your tree on there, on FamilySearch.org, but I will warn you, people can go into that tree and change things on your tree. You have to be very careful with that. You can also put your tree on Ancestry.com for free. And then, you know, their little leaves will pop up and they'll try and get you to subscribe. But you could actually post your tree. And like Mary had explained with the DNA testing, you have your tree on a couple of different sites, and you're going to find more cousins who only choose one of those sites to put their tree on. And so then you're doing a lot more networking that's more productive.
Okay. Well, thank you there very much for that call, Kim, and reminding us about that. And we did get an email from Rita with kind of something that's similar here. She's been working on her family history and worked with Lori about what happens when you thought your family was not your parents. Not quite sure what she means by that, but it can be quite upsetting. Basically, she found out her family wasn't what she thought it was, and it can cause kind of an identity crisis. So she wonders if some companies for DNA are better than others. Mary, do you want to tackle that one?
Sure.
I recommend starting out at Ancestry, and that's because Ancestry has the largest number of people who have tested, which means you should get the most matches there. Other companies are also really important, but I would definitely start at Ancestry, and then I would transfer into Family Tree DNA and MyHeritage, and then I would also test directly at 23andMe if you're looking for answers and you haven't found all of your answers. 23andMe doesn't let you transfer in, and neither does Ancestry, so that's why you have to start out testing there.
Okay.
And in terms of the identity, there is a really good book by Dani Shapiro called Inheritance that talks about her experience in finding out that her father who raised her wasn't her biological father. And I know it can be really, really upsetting to people to find out those things. And oftentimes they're finding them out when their parents have passed away. And it's not possible to go to their parents and say, you know, what happened? And instead, they're left with talking to family, other relatives, and doing DNA testing to figure out that mystery.
That has got to be very upsetting, and I'm sure you both have dealt with that. How often does that happen?
I'm not sure about the statistics in terms of when you're DNA testing, but I do know that there have been different studies to determine how often the father isn't the father that's expected. And it really ranges. It depends upon the culture and the time and the place. So we say that on average, it's about 2% of the time.
Okay. So is that something that you think people should be prepared for if they're going to do this DNA testing, that there is a slight possibility that they aren't who they thought they were?
Definitely.
Okay.
Definitely. Right. And if you're asking a cousin, for example, to test, I think it's really important that before they spit into that tube, that you say to them, hey, if something comes up that's unexpected, do you want me to tell you? Because, you know, it's important, because otherwise, if you're going to them once you get the test results back and you raise that question, they're going to know that something isn't right.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's a very good thought there. Appreciate that, Mary. We've been talking about tracing your family history with Lori Bessler and Mary Eberle. What questions do you have about DNA testing? Have you gotten your DNA tested? What were the results? Were you surprised? Do you need help looking for an ancestor? Well, give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Again, that's 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And we'll be right back, so stay with us after this look at the news. You're listening to The Larry Mueller Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Jill Nadeau. We're talking about tools that are available for tracing your ancestry. Our guests are Lori Bessler, the geology and local history specialist in the Wisconsin Historical Society's Library, Archives, and Museum Collections Division, and Mary Eberle. She's a DNA expert who finds birth parents of adoptees and others with unknown parents. She's also an international speaker on using DNA for family research. Have you had your DNA tested? What questions or comments do you have about the results? Are you having problems climbing your family tree? Well, join us at 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And we're going to go to the phones shortly, but I know you had mentioned earlier, Lori, about the workshops that that the Historical Society is offering, and you've got one coming up with Lori. Why don't you tell us how people can sign up to do that? And also then Lori or Mary will ask you to explain a little bit about what you'll be doing there. So Lori, where do you sign up?
Well, you sign up at wisconsinhistory.org. Go to Research Your Family History or go to the events calendar, and it'll give you access to the workshop, or you just tab in there and then you can go ahead and sign up. It's through our store. It's $40 for the day. Goes from 10 o'clock in the morning until 4 in the afternoon, and it's just an ongoing webinar with breaks in between for lunch and stretching, because it will be intense. There's a lot of information that will be given, but it's all really good information for various levels, too. We're not saying that this is all just advanced researchers. It's not at all. It's a really, really good basic approach to working with DNA results with your research.
Okay. And Mary, have you done this before as a webinar?
Not through Wisconsin Historical Society, but I have done webinars through other societies.
And how does that, I mean, is it easier, harder, just different than doing an in-person one?
For me?
Yeah, for you.
Well, I would say there are pros and cons.
Sure.
You know, it's really nice to have people and to see their faces and to, you know, answer questions as we go. And unfortunately, with the webinars, that doesn't happen. You know, I can't see them. We will do Q&A in between the presentations. So I've got four presentations. One is on Ancestry. One is on 23andMe. One is on GEDmatch, which is a website that allows people to upload their DNA results to it and find additional matches and have some additional tools to work with their DNA. And the last presentation is on understanding ethnicity estimates. I think people have questions about ethnicity estimates. They tend to vary from company to company, which makes you wonder, you know, is this right? You know, which one's right? Is it the one that agrees with my paper trail? Is it the one that's got that coveted heritage that I was looking for?
Yes.
And so we spend an hour going through how it works, why they're different, so that people can better understand what's going on. Mm-hmm. Because I find ethnicity estimates to be very, very useful. And it's controversial. Some people say you should just ignore them or just talk about them at cocktail parties. But I really find them useful. You know, like with that example I said in the beginning with the potential French great-grandmother, that client had about 12% fresh French ethnicity mm-hmm. in his ethnicity estimate. Mm-hmm. So that was a really good indicator that there was something to this story. And it did take some DNA matches who only had French heritage to come up with the other pieces of evidence to say, okay, I feel good about this. Not only were their French ancestors, those French ancestors were in California in the time of the gold rush at the right location.
Right. So it's all little pieces of the puzzle to help put things together.
Right.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
That's
well, we've got lots of people online. So let's just go there right away. Deborah in Winona, Minnesota is our first one. Hi, Deborah.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My grandfather was adopted I don't have the dates with me right now, but the late 1860s in Door County. And I'm wondering how I go about finding information on that adoption or who his parents or mother could actually be.
Lori, why don't you take that one first?
Okay, so for the paper trail, an adoption at that time could have been done through the civil courts. And then those records are not necessarily closed because it's so far back in history. And so I would start with seeing if it was a formal adoption. For civil court records, you would start with the state archives. That's who we are, the WisconsinHistory.org site. You can email us at askarchives@wisconsinhistory.org, and we'll help you identify where are those records. And then the other possibility is if it's informal, then you're looking at other documents that really you're pinning down where is that adoption family, the family the child is adopted into, where are they living at any given time? Now, those will be factors like land records and city directories and things like that that pin them down to a certain place in a certain time. Those will be the first parts of it.
Okay, and Mary, would this be a case where, like, an ancestry test would be helpful?
Yes, definitely. So any of his descendants could test, and those descendants who are more closely related. So, for example, when we're looking for a grandfather, if your parent is able to test, then they will have stronger matches that might lead to that missing biological great-grandparent. And then if that generation is missing, I always recommend testing as many people as you can at whatever generation you have. So if you're an only child, that's fine. But if you have four brothers and sisters, try to get all of them to test. And, it's just that we want to have the best chance and the best set of matches. And when you get to third cousins and beyond, one sibling can match that person, whereas other siblings might not. So when we're talking about further back in time, it's really important to have as many matches as you can. And I've definitely found people's grandparents and great-grandparents by using DNA. It's not always possible. It depends upon the matches, and it depends upon the records.
Okay. So can you explain a little bit about why, if my sister tested, she might have different results than if I tested?
Sure. Siblings will always match the same people if they're second cousin or closer. But when it gets to be third cousins, the DNA gets sorted out and shuffled at every generation. And now if you think about how many generations there are from you to that ancestor, there could be four generations. And then also from that ancestor down to your DNA match, and going up that tree and going down that tree, it's called recombination, but you're basically shuffling the DNA and you're losing little bits of it. And that means that if the bit of DNA that you're matching that third cousin to, you might have that piece of DNA, but your sister might not.
Oh,
it's
I see.
The DNA gets broken up into smaller and smaller pieces.
Okay. All right, great. Well, thank you for that call, Deborah. Let's go to Sarah in Madison now. Hi, Sarah.
Hello. I have a biological half-brother who was born in the 1940s. I don't know the exact year, in Cook County, Illinois, and I don't know the biological mother's name. Is there any way of doing research? She went off to Chicago to have the baby, big secret, to do research to find him.
Ooh. Which one of you want to tackle that one? Lori, maybe?
Well, no, I would have said Mary. With the DNA connection and being so close, I think it's probably accurate.
Okay. So, Mary, you think that would be the best way to go? Have her DNA
yes,
done?
I would. So it's funny because it's actually harder in some ways to find a half-sibling who's out there than it is to find, like, a great-grandparent. And that's because that half-sibling or their children or grandchildren have to test. And we want you to be in all of the databases because who knows, maybe they ordered a 23andMe kit because they saw an advertisement on TV. But it's pretty much test and wait We also have some adoption registries where you can put yourself into this registry to say, I'm this person and I'm looking for a half-sibling, and then the adoptee can go in and look and see. You know, but again, I think it's pretty rare to find somebody that way.
Okay, thank you so much for the call, Sarah. Next up is Nancy in Minneapolis. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, how are you?
Well, thanks. What can we help you with?
Yeah, I just want to make a comment or maybe have your guest comment on the fact that now your DNA is out there. As far as privacy issues and things that are out there, when you put that out on these sites, I think, you know, that could possibly be a problem. You know, I mean, I wouldn't want my real name associated with that, you know, in case something were to happen. You don't know. I mean, I'm, you know, not like a serial killer or anything, but I just think that people should be aware that once it's out there, it's public information. Is that true or?
Well, thank you for raising that question. And we do know that law enforcement is using some of these databases. They're using GEDmatch and they're using FamilyTree DNA. And both of those sites handle it differently. On GEDmatch, everyone is opted out of law enforcement looking at their DNA results. And it's not so much that law enforcement goes on their computer and sees, like, oh, there's Mary Eberly. It's GATCCC. You know, instead, law enforcement is uploading a crime scene sample, and they're looking for matches to that crime scene sample. And they're getting matches just like you and I get matches. We get a list and it says, here's how much DNA you share. Here's how many pieces of DNA or segments. You know, it's not them like hunting me down because I have a certain DNA sequence. So FamilyTree DNA actually has people in the United States opted in to law enforcement, seeing or being able to match their results. And if you're not happy with that, then you can switch it and opt out. And people in the European Union, because of the higher level of data protection and privacy laws, they're all opted out at FamilyTree DNA. So we definitely know that we have law enforcement taking advantage of these websites in order to identify potential criminal suspects and also victims. So we have a huge population of John Does and Jane Does whose bodies we have found, and I believe there's something like 400,000 of them, where we just don't know who they are, but there are nonprofits now and law enforcement who are trying to identify them through these genealogical databases.
Okay. And it does give you those options as to whether or not you want to have that public or not, right?
Whether you want it accessible to law enforcement.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, thank you for bringing up those concerns, Nancy. Next, let's go on to Angela, and she's in Madison. Hi, Angela.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I have a quick question. My mother and father got divorced shortly before I was born, and I was an only child. And so I had a wonderful life with my mom, but she passed away. And so now I'm curious to see if I have any perhaps half-siblings out there, and I was wondering what's the best way to find out.
Okay, thank you, Angela. What's her first step? Would that be, again, the Ancestry.com, Lori? Or Mary?
Yeah. Testing there, being in all the databases to see if someone pops up. Mm-hmm. And they would pop up on your match list as, sometimes it will be called out as a half-sibling, but sometimes it's a little more confusing and it might say close family. Because the DNA testing companies have categories that they put our matches in, and sometimes it's not super clear, but basically, if you have a half-sibling, you would be sharing about 25% of your DNA with them.
Okay, so start there, Angela, and good luck. Next, we have Lynn, and she's in La Crosse. Hi, Lynn, how can we help you?
Hi, thank you for your expertise. I have three prong. One is a comment from your earlier discussions about DNA and people who are looking for relationships, ancestors who are not related via adoption or for whatever reason. I have been contacted by some people. I'm happy to help them out. Sometimes they're very desperate. Sometimes it's based, their questions are based on trying to find health histories and are looking for answers to help them, their family, as far as health questions, and or just finding a belonging. So happy to help them out. But my question today is, I'm on Ancestry and actually Family Tree Maker both. I don't know, somehow the software issues is big for me. I'm not technically skilled. So Ancestry, I have myself and siblings, living siblings, and they're not private, and I need to know how to do that. And then the other thing about Family Tree Maker, the software is just confusing to me. It's so many levels to it, and how to operate the software. Is there somewhere, I know there's tutorials, but is there some way that a course or something that I can learn how to work the software, just to plug things in and structure it?
Okay. Lori, do you have any suggestions on where she can go to get help with that Family Tree software?
Definitely. And Ancestry. So when you put your names into Ancestry, if people are living or have a chance of even living, you don't have their death date down, then those people show up as just living. They don't put their name or anything out there for anyone else to see it. You see it in your tree, but I don't see it in your tree. Okay? They just show up as living. So they have that protection there. Secondly, with Family Tree Maker, there's a lot of different programs out there. There's Roots Magic, there's Legacy, there's Family Tree Maker. All of them have, there are websites that you can go to watch tutorials. And I do encourage you to watch those little short tutorials and take these the aspects of a family tree program one at a time. Okay, the main idea behind a family tree program is you want to be able to enter the information that you found, their birth date, their marriage date, where they got born, where they were married, all of that. And possibly also what source told you that, you know. So I think that's important. If you do want to work with someone at a distance, then that is something I meet with people over the Internet or by phone or in person about. So a consultation might be a possibility. All you do to schedule a consultation with me is email asklibrary@wisconsinhistory.org. And that way we can go through it step by step, and I can help you identify what do you want to accomplish with this and how do you get there.
Okay. Thanks so much for that call, Lynn. Hope that helped out. Give Lori, send Lori an email, and you must get a lot of emails, Lori.
You know, it's funny because I give the invitation out to people when I go talk to a group of 100 people, and I'll get like 2 people.
Oh, seriously?
I don't know why. I don't charge anything.
Interesting.
It's a free consultation. I'll meet with people an hour. Sometimes it's gone farther because I get pulled into your story.
Oh, sure,
I can't let it go. So,
I love it. Now, that kind of relates to something Pat emailed and wants to know, can you hire someone to do the research for him? And if so, how much would he have to pay for that? What kind of charges are involved?
So most researchers that we have a list of researchers who are in the Madison area mostly, and they do this kind of research for people, and then they'll create reports and give them all the findings. And it varies. Some of these costs it's per hour, and some of them, I think the lowest I've seen is like $35 or $40 an hour, and the highest is over $100 an hour. The trick is that I always tell people, I suggest that you meet with me first, so that I can explain to you what to even expect to be out there for resources for that a researcher to use, so that I can tell you here, this is where the paper trail is in the variety of places, so that I can help you come up with a research plan. Then you go in more informed before you start working with a professional.
Okay, excellent. So definitely contact Lori, and it was asklibrary@wisconsinhistory.org. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. Whew, and I didn't even write it down. I'm impressed with myself.
That's good.
All right. And then quickly now, Mary, why don't you tell us about your webinar? Is that this weekend?
Right. It's the one that Lori described, and it is this weekend on Saturday, May 23rd, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and I will be presenting those four talks on Ancestry, 23andMe, GEDmatch, and Understanding Ethnicity Estimates.
Wonderful. And I'm assuming that there's no limit to how many people can join?
There is no limit.
We're
at a good number right now, but lots of room.
All right. Excellent. Well, we've been talking about tracing your family history with Lori Bessler and Mary Eberle. Ladies, thank you so much for being with us today. Much appreciated. Mary's website is dnahunters.com. And to sign up for that webinar again, wisconsinhistory.org. And you just have to go to events, or it's also on our program note. Tomorrow at this time, we'll be looking both up and down. We have a guest who will talk about astronomy and another one talking about geology. Hope you can join us on the Ideas Network. Jane Rotunda is our on-air producer today, and Tyler Ditter is our technical director. I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Stay well.